Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax, your host, coming to you from Cat Swamp Road in Warren County, New Jersey. So hopefully you're having a good day. I always want to wish all of my listeners that. And if you are new to the show, you hopefully like it and you listen every week or when you get the chance, I greatly appreciate that. You will find that it is important for me to thank you for listening and for also to wish you a good day, a prosperous day, productive day, right? So many times on the farm, all of those words don't go together. And so when we have a day that things go as planned, we really need to enjoy them, right? Because usually it's amazing how you could plan so well, you could just get all your ducks in a row, and then you go out of the house in the morning. I know I do that with a lot of zeal and enthusiasm, and by 7:30 in the morning, the train is off the track and laying on its side with the wheels spinning. But I guess that's why they call it farming. And I think the same thing happens in many other businesses. It's just that agriculture is such a complex machine. And I don't mean the machine as far as a tractor or something is concerned. There's so many moving parts to running a farm or running a ranch. You have the weather to deal with, you have machinery to deal with, you have other conditions, soil structure, is it wet, is it dry, is it too hot today for the crops, so it's you want to run a center pivot but you don't want to run it during the day, so not that we have a center pivot here. But anyway, it's a lot of moving parts, right? It's like trying to pick up a couple of slinkies at the same time. But somehow, by God's grace, we get through it, we make it happen, and we move forward and are successful and survive. So that's what it's all about. But just keep in mind that the grass is not greener on the other side. And to those of us who have jobs also in town or some other careers in farm part-time, right, which is like almost impossible to farm part-time, that we know that we in life you just change or exchange one set of problems for another. But what the show is going to be about today is a task that no one likes to do, or at least I don't know of anyone that likes to actually accomplish it. You know, and on the farm, there's many, many jobs and many, many tasks and things that need to be done. And I say, farm or ranch or vineyard or orchard, whatever you happen to be, whatever your agricultural operation is. And there's tasks that you really enjoy. There's tasks that you're like, well, you could take them or leave them. And there's tasks that you really don't look forward to doing, but you know that they need to get done, and you have to be in the right mindset to do them. And if you're not in the right mindset, they become very arduous and frustrating. And if you're in the right mindset, they're actually, at best, palatable. And one of those tasks on our farm that fall into the category of I do not like doing them, but it needs to get done, is picking rocks out of the field. And we do not have a rock picker. The rock picker is me. So I enjoy looking back at the field or planting into a field that the rocks have been removed from, but I don't really enjoy picking them up. At best, if I'm in the right mindset, it's really not too bad. I guess what frustrates me about it is that if you only have a couple of rocks, then that's not a big deal. You ride around with the tractor with the bucket on it, you jump off and you throw the rocks in the bucket and you move on. But if you have a lot of rocks or small stones, and you almost get very frustrated because it seems to be overwhelming, and then you have to make the decision on which one you're going to pick up or which one you're not going to pick up, that actually adds a component of stress to it, and you want to be able to look back over your shoulder and say, wow, look, look how nice that looks now without those rocks in the field. And if you have a lot of rocks in a certain section, then obviously you work very hard, you look back and you try to convince yourself that it looks better, right? So who knows? But rock picking is not one of my greatest joys. What I've done is, on now a smaller field, I've actually gone with a York rake and raked the field, which is time consuming, and then you have to get all that in a bucket, and we do not have a rock bucket, so I just have a regular bucket on the tractor, and you don't want to pull too much dirt with it, too much topsoil with it, so you got to try to scoop it up without taking too much of your precious topsoil or making divots in the land, right? You go in there, you dig in there, and you make everything worse. But rock picking is not one of my favorites, but it is something that needs to be done. So what does that have to do with the hot rod farmer? But what it has to do with the hot rod farmer is that there are tasks on machinery that none of us like to do, or very few of us like to do. And one of those tasks I know that fall into that category for me, which may not be for you, for me is valve adjustment. So today's show is going to be talking about the need and the importance of keeping the valves adjusted on all of the engines that you have. And most modern engines today have hydraulic valve lifters that really do not require adjustment, and we will discuss that also, because there will be a time when you need to set what is called the preload on a hydraulic lifter. So let's say you had an engine apart, you had a cylinder head off, you had possibly an intake manifold. Some engines have the push rods go through the intake manifold. So if you took that off, you would need to adjust the preload on the valves. So that is what we're going to discuss today. And what I'm going to try to do is make a convincing case that, just like getting the rocks out of the field, the convincing case that we need to get into the right mindset, and we need to run what we call in engine building, run the valves, R-U-N, run the valves. We need to set the lash on the valves, and why it is so important for you to do that, to keep your engines running at peak efficiency, but also to minimize downtime and failures, because a misadjusted valve could cause a lot of problems. So that is what we are going to discuss, and we have a special delivery segment at the end today, and that is we have a letter from someone, and he enjoyed the show a few weeks back on duty cycle circuits, pulse width modulated circuits, and he has a couple of questions on that. So that'll be at the end, as we always like to include those letters and give that feedback. And if you have any questions or want to comment on something, I want to have a dialogue with you, not a monologue. I just don't want to talk to you. I want to hear from you and help you in any way I possibly can. And as I've always said in the past, I will get back to everyone who contacts me, and I will also give you my best advice or my best explanation. If I do not know something, I will tell you. I won't make up something just to so you think that I know what I'm talking about. I will not do that. If I don't know, I will tell you. I could possibly research it and get back to you, but I will always give you the truth and the truth to the best of my ability. I will never intentionally mislead you or send you down a path or make up something. But that brings me to a topic that I've been meaning to touch on in the past couple of weeks, is that over the life of this show, which October 25th will have its anniversary, and the website, I've been blessed to communicate with a lot of people from around the world. And they've sent me emails at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. I know it's a long address, but if you send me an email and save it, you only have to click on it one time after that. But if some of you may recall that back in July, my computer had a catastrophic crash, and I lost 99% of everything. And what I did basically lose is all of the emails, addresses of the people that have corresponded with me prior to, let's say, July 4th, when I think the computer died the first week of July, or June 30th. So I lost all your email addresses. So if you're wondering why I never communicated back with you, if you've contacted me since then, I have your email address because it saved it. But anything prior to, let's say, July 4th is gone. So, you know, please send me an email at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com, even if it's just to say hello, so that I may have your email address back into my file. And you would think with today's technology that they'd be able to save that. And interestingly enough, I have another email address that I use that I've had for many, many years, a personal email address, and that's through Earthlink. And Earthlink saved everything. I didn't lose anything, but through, I guess that's Outlook, Microsoft Outlook, everything went just disappeared and evaporated. So if you didn't hear from me and you say, geez, you know, Ray doesn't even care about my crops or what's happening, he gave me some advice. That is why, because I don't have your address anymore. So today's talk, as I said, is going to be about understanding valve lash and why you need to check the valves on the myriad of different types of engines that you have on your farm. But the discussion is going to be rooted more in understanding the need to maintain valve lash on all your farm engines, and it is not going to be reviewing procedure. The reason why I'm saying that is because that the procedure to adjust the valves on an engine is usually different for each application. Yes, there'll be common aspects of it, for instance, like that the valves have to be closed and not open, but on some engines you may need to shim something, place a shim in there. Some engines may have rocker shafts, one rocker shaft for a hydraulic valve lifter that you can't physically adjust each one. Others maybe have a mechanical valve lifter. You may need to have a special feeler gauge, special meaning that not its thickness, but you may need to have a 45 degree bend on the feeler gauge. You used to call those overhead cam valve feeler gauges. You may have a overhead cam engine. A lot of engines today or overhead cam, even diesels that are in farm equipment, overhead cam engine, you may need to shim a bucket. They call it a bucket instead of a lifter. But the theory of why the importance of keeping the valves lashed does not change, but it's application specific to the adjustment. So the first thing that you need to do when you are going to consider adjusting or checking the valves, the valve lash, which I will explain what the term lash means. I know that most of you are familiar with it, but I will give you the actual definition, is that the first thing you're going to need to do is you're going to need to have a shop manual that is going to give you the proper specification for that engine and the procedure to how to adjust them. You may have, before you start, you may have to go to the dealer and get some shims for that particular engine, or what you may want to do is check those valves first and see if you need shims and not spend the money or running to town to buy them. So it is going to be a theoretical discussion, not a practical or empirical discussion of how to adjust the valves. So, but the common denominator in all of this is that we need to be able to have the rocker arm and or follower, depending upon what type of design the valve train is. If it's an overhead cam engine, they historically call it a follower instead of a rocker arm, but in essence, it's still going to be an intermediate component that helps interact between the lobe of the cam, the lifter or tappet, or bucket in some instances, all the same theory of operation, and the valve stem itself. So let's get off the table right from the beginning. Why do I not like to adjust valves, and why do most people not like to adjust valves, all right? And I'm going to deal with that right up front. The objection that I have and most people have is that it is a real pain in the neck in most instances to get to the site, get to the area. It's an ordeal to get to the area to adjust the valves. You have to take the valve cover off, that usually, or rocker arm cover, whatever it's called, same thing, it's synonymous, all right? It's usually awkwardly placed. On some engines, you may have to take a lot of, most times, you'll have to take a lot of other components off just to get to the valve cover and still fight to get to the valve cover. And then once you get to the site of where you could actually see the valve train on that particular engine, often it's awkward to get to. You may be having, you know, on a combine or a tractor, you may have to stand on a ladder or something to get up there and work on it. You're bending over, the turbo is pushing into your stomach. None of this stuff is easy. So the actual task of adjusting the valves or checking the valves clearance is usually not difficult, but getting to that operative site, and we call it the operative site as they do in medicine, where the operation is going on, is the burden. And then now you're cleaning the valve cover gasket, you're doing all of this, and you're trying to, depending upon the design of the engine, you may be in there and you have to have two wrenches and a screwdriver and a feeler gauge to adjust the clearance, or you're taking a rocker arm shaft up and putting a shim underneath it, and it's a pain in the neck. I'm not going to deny it, but it's a pain in the neck that's well worthwhile. And the good thing about it with today's engines is that it's not something that needs to be done so routinely as it did years ago. And the reason for that being is that there's been great advancements in metallurgy and in machining, that the valve clearance doesn't vary like it did years ago. So why is it important to adjust the valves? But before we do that, let me explain to you truly what the term valve lash means. And lash is another term for clearance. Simply put, any component inside an engine is going to change in dimension. So when the parts of the valve train and the engine itself, which is the block, the cylinder heads, the camshaft, when the parts are cold, they shrink. And as they gain temperature, or as they are heated, they expand. So for this reason, free play or lash is required so that the parts do not bind when heated. Free play is created between the rocker arm and the valve stem tip. So the clearance between the rocker arm and the valve stem tip is defined as the lash. And historically, valve trains that had a lash specification, 20 thousandths hot, 20 thousandths cold. Hot meaning, if you see anything that says that you have to adjust the valves hot, and lots of times that'll be on the exhaust side, not so much the intake side. What ideally they would like to have normal operating temperature, but the pragmatic of it is that you're not going to be able to do that in almost every instance. You're not going to be able to get an engine up to 180 degrees, pull the rocker arm cover off, start to adjust the valves, and in like fashion, as you start to get to the first valve, the first cylinder will be hotter than the last cylinder. So what they basically do is they try to say about between, not room temperature, maybe 100, 110 degrees. So you want to build some heat in the motor, and then from there, you want to start your adjustments if they say hot. But most engines today, most modern engines, will have a, it'll just be a cold adjustment. You may have some older ones on your farm that will require a hot adjustment, and then you could also probably just add maybe a thousandth or two for expansion. So if the spec is 20,000s hot, you may want to set it at 22,000s cold and then go from there. And I'll talk about this in a little bit more detail. So in essence, what you're doing, the valve lash or the valve clearance or the specification is in essence there to compensate for the expansion of the parts when they are heated. So they will expand when they're heated, and they will contract when they are cooled off. Now, on an engine that has an aluminum block and head versus cast iron block and head, or a cast iron block with aluminum head, the rate of expansion is going to be much greater. So on those types, when you have an alloy, aluminum alloy block and cylinder heads, it's typical that you'll see the lash in the lash will change by 10 to 20 thousandths from hot to cold. So those are very, very critical. In addition, the lash setting means the effective valve lift is less than the height of the cam. So that is the free play there. And I will, not going to belabor that, but I will touch on it a little bit. But what is the valve? So inside an engine, we're going to have an intake valve and exhaust valve, whether we have two valves per cylinder, one valve per cylinder, one intake, one exhaust, two intake, two exhaust, is irrelevant. But the valve is the gateway in and out of the cylinder. So just like if you were letting cattle out of a barn, you're letting dairy cows or whatever out of the barn, all right, the more that you open the gate, the more cows that could get through the gate faster and quicker. So if the gate is closed a lot, maybe only one cow could sneak through at a time, and you'll have a traffic jam of cows there. But if the gate is fully open, then maybe three cows can go abreast out of the barn, and they could exit the barn quicker, and they could empty the barn quicker or enter the barn quicker if they're coming to get milked. So contrary to popular belief, the cylinder bore in any engine is not filled to capacity with charge. And I've discussed this before in the turbocharger program, but I'm going to review it briefly. And charge is fuel and air mixed together. On a normally aspirated engine, that means no supercharger, no turbocharger, the amount of cylinder fill is measured in percent. The amount of cylinder fill is limited. A supercharger or turbocharger will increase the amount of cylinder fill. And the metric, the standard, what we measure cylinder fill by, is called volumetric efficiency. On a normally aspirated engine, which I meant to say a second ago when I kind of got ahead of my thoughts, is that you will only experience about 80% VE, volumetric efficiency. It means that cylinder will only be filled about 80%. And that occurs at peak torque. So if you're buying an engine, you're buying a truck, you're buying a tractor, and it says that, you know, peak torque is at 3,000 RPM, that is when that engine is going to have maximum cylinder fill, maximum volumetric efficiency. So if we want to put some simple math to this, let's say you have a 300 cubic inch engine and the cylinder fill at peak torque is 80%, so that engine only has the capability to do the work of a 240 cubic inch engine, because 300 cubic inches times 80% is 240. If you had a 240 cubic inch engine that had a 100% volumetric efficiency, the cylinder is being filled as much as possible, all right, like a hopper in a plant that's filled right up to the top, what then it would have the same power potential as a 300 cubic inch engine with 80% volumetric efficiency. And as an aside to this, that is how the industry, be it in agriculture or being in automotive, is getting so much power from these small engines, and they're increasing the volumetric efficiency instead of having a large engine. So think of it as crop yield. So the higher, let's say you need to get 300 bushels of corn, to accomplish whatever to feed your cows. All right, so we'll use that simplistic. Stay with the 300 number, right? And if you're getting 300 bushels per acre, then you only need to plant and harvest 1 acre because you've got your goal. You need 300 bushels. That 1 acre yielded 300 bushels. If you're only yielding 100 bushels per acre, then you would need to plant 3 acres of corn to get 300 bushels. So it's what the need is versus what the yield of the crop is. And it's the same thing with an engine. If you could make the engine more efficient, in other words, fill the cylinder more, you don't need a bigger engine. Less acres, right? Less acres to accomplish the same thing. So now, the VE, the volumetric efficiency, will decrease from peak torque to maximum horsepower. So torque is cylinder fill while horsepower is RPM. And I did a show about this a while back, so you may want to look at the archives. Almost every on my website, farmmachinerydigest.com, or any of the hosting sites, Fran, Global Ag Network, Ag Daily, they've archived most, if not all, of my shows. But if not, go to my website, and I have a show about horsepower and torque. So now, if an engine is turbocharged or supercharged, it uses this fan to increase the volumetric efficiency. So now, what does this have to do with valve adjustment? Well, we're talking about the intake valve at this particular time. Now, the intake valve is the gateway to the cylinder bore, just like the farm gate from the barn is the gateway for the cows to get into the pasture. So if the valve lash is excessive, then valve lift is lost. So let's say that there's supposed to be a 20,000th clearance between the valve, and the lash is always measured between, as I said, the rocker arm, the follower, whatever you want to call it, the finger, sometimes they call finger followers, the rocker arm, we'll use that term for this talk today, and the stem of the valve. So if the lash is supposed to be 20,000ths, which is designed to make up for the expansion when that engine is heated, all right? So if it's 20,000ths cold, it may only be 5,000ths hot. So that lash setting will decrease the effective lift from the lobe of the camshaft. So if you think about it, that if you're losing free play, if you're losing a 20,000ths, then if the cam lifter, the lobe on the cam is supposed to give 300,000ths lift, we'll stay with that number, when there's 20,000ths lash, then in theory it could only give the valve 280,000ths of lift, right? Because we're losing 20,000ths in the free play in the lash. And how the engineering community gets around that is by modifying what is called the rocker arm ratio. And that's determining in relationship to the rocker arm's fulcrum, its pivot point, and by moving that pivot point on the rocker arm, it is going to modify or amplify the lift. So it makes up for that. So that is called the rocker arm ratio. Most engines have a 1.5:1 ratio. So the rocker arm is designed to amplify, to magnify, to multiply the lobe lift of the cam 1.5 times. So if you had a lobe on a camshaft that was 300,000ths high, all right, and you had a 1.5:1 ratio rocker arm, then that valve would have the potential to lift 450,000ths. So it's 300,000ths times 1.5, which is 450,000ths. So it has the potential to lift at 450,000ths. And now put a 20,000ths lash in there. So we take 450 and minus 20,000ths, which would be the effective valve lift, would be 430,000ths of an inch from a cam lobe that's 300,000ths high, but with a 1.5 rocker arm ratio. And you don't really, I know this is very hard to understand, to follow along on a podcast. So I just wanted to throw it out at you so you understand that that's not the crux of the show today. This is much easier in a seminar or a video presentation where I could write on a blackboard and show you it, but that is how that is determined. So now, the intake valve is the gateway to the cylinder. Just like I said, the farm, the bar, the gate to the barn is the gateway to the pasture. So if the valve has excessive amount of lash, then you are losing lift. And if it has excessive amount of lash, you are losing lift. And then in turn, the amount of cylinder fill, the volumetric efficiency of the engine will be diminished because you are not opening the gate enough for all of the cows to get out. So now, when you're talking about cows exiting in a barn, the worst thing that would happen is that it takes longer for all the cows to get out with a gate that is only partially open, but they will all get out. All right, when you're discussing cylinder fill in an engine, you only have those few milliseconds, thousands of a second, to fill that cylinder because the piston is traveling very fast because the crankshaft is turning 3,000-4,000 RPM. So you only have a window of opportunity to fill that cylinder, and that is akin to like an optimum planting window, right? So if you have an optimum planting date, when you vary beyond that date, then your yield goes down because you're past the optimum. On an engine, if you don't open the valve far enough, then you're not at your optimum volumetric efficiency. Will the engine still run? Yes, but its efficiency will go down, its horsepower and torque potential will go down, and it'll still be using the same amount of fuel because the fuel is independent of what the valve is doing. So the valve lash is very important because it is going to determine how well and how efficient that engine is going to run. So to summarize that, on the intake valve, right, if the valve lash, the clearance is excessive because it's worn, then valve lift is lost, and in turn, the intake port flow drops along with the horsepower and torque. Now let's move for a moment to the exhaust valve. But we're discussing the exhaust valve, if the lash is too wide, too much lash, an excessive amount of lash, there is decreased lift as it would be with the intake valve, and this limits cylinder evacuation during the exhaust stroke, and this costs power and longevity due to excessive heat. So in essence, what's going to happen is the exhaust gases are going to become backlogged. They're going to become it's going to be like a plugged pipe in a sewer system. They're not going to be able to get out of that cylinder, and then what will happen is that they will have to be pushed out with the piston, and if the valve is not opening sufficiently at all, just cracking open, then the engine power will be dramatically down because you will not be able to fill it with charge. Now let me stop there, because I'm trying to bring this together hopefully in a succinct way, is that the idea with every engine, whether it's a lawnmower engine or a 1,000 horsepower in a combine, right, the idea with every engine is that as soon as that exhaust valve cracks open, that exhaust valve will crack open while the piston is still dwelling at bottom dead center. And when that exhaust valve cracks open, the pressure in the bore will be higher than the pressure in the exhaust port of the cylinder head, all right? Because you had the heated gas and the expansion of the gas in the cylinder. So when that exhaust valve just cracks open, that is what is called blowdown. And you want to be able to have as much of that cylinder pressure drop. So you want a delta P, you want a large delta P, you want a lot of that cylinder to evacuate as soon as that exhaust valve opens. Whatever does not evacuate during blowdown gets pushed out as the piston on the exhaust stroke, which is actually called the pumping loop, goes towards top dead center, and as the cam is turning, the valve is opening more, and then at one particular point, the valve dwells at its maximum opening, which is going to be a function of the lobe of the cam, the height of the lobe of the cam, and the multiplicative effect of the rocker arm ratio minus any valve lash adjustment or valve lash specification. So what happens, it takes power for that piston to work and push, like you taking a grease gun and trying to, and so let's talk about a grease gun. You're going to grease a Zerk fitting, and the Zerk fitting is new and clean, and the joint is nice and clean, and you go, and it's very easy to pump, we've all experienced this, pump grease into that Zerk fitting and grease that joint. Now if the Zerk fitting happens to be getting start to get plugged up, right, and the ball in the Zerk doesn't move much, right, just like would be in an engine with the valve, exhaust valve not moving much, what's going to happen? That grease doesn't want to go in easily. You're going to strain when you're pumping that grease gun, and it has the possibility, if all right, if you don't have a locking connection on there, for that actuary to pop off the Zerk and shoot the grease into the air. All right, so the thing is that, think of it that way, is that the piston will eventually push the exhaust out from the valve, whatever does not evacuate during blowdown, but that's going to take work from the crankshaft, just like it's going to take work from your arms to pump that grease gun to be able to put the grease through a Zerk that is partially blocked or not being fully open. And that is going to cost the engine power, and it's going to cost the fuel efficiency, because it's using that fuel, that conversion of chemical to mechanical energy, to push the exhaust out instead of it going out very easily, or the majority of it going out very easily when the exhaust valve just cracks open, and that is during blowdown. In addition, the incorrect valve lash is going to impact the valve timing and engine reliability. Now, if the valve clearance is too tight, so we're supposed to have, we'll stick with the 20,000ths, we're supposed to have 20,000ths lash clearance between the rocker arm and the stem, and we have 1,000ths, all right? If the valve clearance is too tight, then the valve will open earlier and close later than intended. So now that valve lash being too tight is modifying that whole camshaft profile, or the response of the valve in regards to the camshaft profile, because it doesn't have the desired lash or free play. If the valve is too loose, meaning excess, if the lash is too loose, meaning excessive clearance, then the valve will open later and close earlier. So you could almost, like, if you take your hand, or I'm doing it right now, and you take, let's say, your index finger on your left hand, and you take your hand on your right hand, and you go and you simulate, if you simulate a little bit amount of lash or no amount of lash and push on your finger, you will see what I've just told you is 100% true, is that it's going to impact it. So if you have a lot of lash, then part of the movement of the lifter through the rocker arm is going to be wasted because it did not come in contact with the valve. And if you have not enough lash for specification, then what's going to happen is that at a certain point on the lobe of the cam, the valve is going to start to open sooner, and then it will stay open longer. If it stays open longer, that's a problem, because you have to remember that the camshaft works in conjunction with the crankshaft and the position of the piston in the bore. So that is another, and that is one of the reasons why the power goes down and the efficiency of the engine goes down, because you are changing the valve timing events, and you're either keeping the valve open too long if it's tight, not enough lash, and blowing, and on the intake stroke, blowing that charge back out into the, and it's not staying in the bore, or if it's on the not enough, or if you don't have the valve open enough, it's stifling it. So I don't want, I'll probably talk too much, I'll confuse you, all right? So the effect of setting the valve lash too tight can result in the valve not fully closing on the seat. So now this will allow the cylinder pressure, saying, to escape along with high temperature combustion gases. Now, it is very possible, and this is very common, then for the temperature of the valve head, meaning the head of the valve and the valve seat. The seat is part of the cylinder head, not the valve head. The valve head is the flat part of the valve, all right, what they are called, like a tulip valve, that's what it's called, all right, so it is then very, very likely that the valve head and the valve seat, the temperature becomes so high that you will burn the valve. And what burning the valve means is that the temperature actually cut a notch or cut a piece of the valve away. So if you have a burnt valve on any engine, then historically you had a lash problem, all right? You had a lash problem, and it usually was too tight. Now, what could also happen if you keep running this engine like this is that the first thing that you do is it's called a flame cut. You flame cut the valve, and then you flame cut the seat. And if you ignore it and keep running it, then what could happen is that you could actually flame cut the cylinder head. And if you flame cut the cylinder head beyond the seat and the valve face, that this usually means that the cylinder head is junk or needs a lot of machining work. If the cylinder head does not have an insert for the seat, then it's possible for it to be bored out and to press in an insert for a seat. If it has an insert and you go beyond that and you cut the head, you're basically looking for a different cylinder head. So now, this also is usually an aside to this, there's more problems. Because of that excessive heat, the engine usually ends up burning and charring the oil that lubricates the valve as it goes through the guide in the cylinder head, and it chars and burns that and creates a film on the valve stem. Then that ends up causing the valve to stick in the head, which further gives you problems. And on some engines, it gives you the possibility of actually having a collision with the valve and the piston, which is something that you do not want. So if the valve lash is excessive from a lack of adjustment, we were talking about too tight before. If the valve lash is excessive from a lack of adjustment, the engine is going to be noisy, and the volumetric efficiency, the amount of cylinder fill and or cylinder discharge evacuation on the exhaust valve, on the exhaust stroke, all right, is going to suffer. And that's going to give you decreased performance, decreased fuel economy, all right, and a noisy operation. And in addition, there's going to be excessive wear from the valve pounding against the seat. So you will usually not burn a valve with excessive lash, too much clearance. You'll usually burn it when it's tight, but you will mushroom over and beat up the entire valve train, the rocker arm, the valve stem itself, all right, depending upon the valve train design, whether it's a shaft rocker or a stud rocker. So you're going to end up building that up, because think of it this way, is that if you were to take something, let's say you had a piece of metal and you put on a workbench, and you have a ball peen hammer, and you're going and you're hitting it, and the deflection, the lift of the hammer is a half inch, all right, you're probably not even going to damage that piece of metal. Now, if you take that hammer and you lift it up 6 inches and you swing it down, you're gonna have more of a shock impact when that ball peen hammer hits that piece of metal. So the thing is that we're not talking 6 inches on valve lash, but if you have excessive valve lash, then what is going to happen is you're going to end up pounding that valve. And I have seen engines that actually ended up mushrooming over the valve stem, where the rocker arm hits it, or actually deteriorating and mushrooming over the rocker arm itself, or both. So that is not good. So basically, in essence, is that this is like, you know, crop nutrition, all right, soil fertility with base saturation. Everything needs to be balanced. Everything needs to be in its proper specification. So another thing to keep in mind is that because you got to take half the motor apart, the top of the motor apart, to get to adjust the valves, all right, that it gives you the opportunity to look things over and spot other potential problems. You may look and say, well, man, look at this. This turbo drain back is leaking. Or look, I can now see this bypass hose and it's starting to weep. That's where I'm losing my coolant from. So whenever you're getting in there, like getting in the field or digging a root pit in the field, that you get an opportunity to see things that you would not be able to see. So when you're doing a valve lash and taking things apart to get to it, keep your eyes open for potential problem areas that you could circumvent and before they become an issue and really stop that piece of equipment, right? But the other thing that I want to tell you, which is very important, is that you need to be able to recognize that the state, the condition of the valve lash is also very telling. So let's say you pull the rocker cover off, the valve cover off this engine, you start to the first procedure when, like I said, we're going to talk about the theory of it, not the actual procedure for that engine. So once you have the specifications, the first thing to do is check all of the valves. What some guys do is loosen everything up first and then readjust it. I do not like to do that, because what you've basically done is you've destroyed what I call the forensic evidence of what's happening inside that motor. So your first step is that you want to check all of the valves. You want to check all of the valves and check the lash. You may want to write it down, depending upon your memory, how familiar you are with it. You number one intake, number two exhaust, number three intake, number four, number three exhaust, what have you, and write it down. Now, if you find now those valves, they should either be right on the money, all right, or they should be uniformly loose. So let's stick with that 20,000th specification. So if it's 20,000th intake, 20,000th exhaust, sometimes you'll have exhaust, they'll have a little bit more lash required because it is going to have be run hotter. Then what you need to do is, if you check all of these and they're within a thousandth or two thousandths of one another, that is fine. Then you'll bring them all in specification and you're done. All right, if they're all loose, they should be all loose the same amount. Now if you're checking, so spec is 20,000ths, this one is 21, fine, this one is 22, fine, this one is 21, this one is about closer to 20, that's all fine. Now you go to cylinder 4 and the valve is tight. The valve lash is 18,000ths, all right, 18,000ths, then you have to stop right there. Because if a valve is found to be too tight before adjustment, that usually indicates that the valve seat recession, that the valve seat is moving up into the cylinder head, or the valve is starting to actually pull through the cylinder head. And in either case, if you leave that like that, you don't just say, oh, this one is tight, the hell with it, I'm just going to loosen it up and be fine. That if that valve seat is receding, or that valve is starting to pull through the cylinder head, because if it's pulling through the cylinder head, or if the valve seat is receding, it's going to recede up. It's not going to recede away from the combustion chamber. It's going to go up into the hill cylinder head, and that's where your valve clearance is going away. Then that is a problem, and that cylinder head needs to be removed, because at this particular point, you did not hurt the engine. If you start to pull that valve through the head, all right, you have the opportunity to break that valve, drop that seat out, or just snap that valve, let it drop down into the cylinder, the piston comes up, you grenade the piston, and it is a very good possibility that you're bending the connecting rod and or kicking that valve through the side of the block, and that engine is junk. So keep in mind that when you check them before you adjust them, you want them to be uniform. All right, you want them to be uniform. And like I said, there's a little tolerance there, but tight is not good. Excessive, I'd rather have excessively loose than excessively tight. Now, if they're excessively loose, then what you want to do is you want to study that rocker arm, you want to study that valve stem. All right, for some reason, that one is, it may be peening over more, and that is a problem onto itself also, but it's not of as much detriment as too tight. Too tight will definitely, is an indication, it's like your corn turning purple. Things are not good, all right, that we need to look and see. We can't just loosen it up and forget about it and go around, you know. And as I said, that a too excessive looseness can reveal that the valve stem is mushrooming, that the parts, the rocker arm, the pivot, wherever it is, wherever it's on its stead, is very worn, or that the adjustment mechanism is not being able to stay fixed and hold. So you will find some differences in clearance, but that you want them to be very, very tight. Think of it this way. You want to go through the field, right? You want to have the same, on the yield monitor, you want to have the same amount of yield throughout the field. And the same thing is with this. But what's going to happen is that tight is really the light bulb needs to go off in your head. You need to sound the klaxon horn that it is a problem. Now, that all of this what we discuss is with a mechanical, what's called a solid valve lifter. All right, so that has lashing. If an engine has a hydraulic valve lifter, the hydraulic lifter is what actually works and takes up the lash, so there's no lash adjustment on a hydraulic valve lift. That's why people like hydraulic valve lifters. All right, so the thing is that the oil acts like a cushion, and the push rod goes against the piston in the valve lifter. There's actually a little piston in there. So what happens is that on a hydraulic lifter motor, you're not setting the valve lash, you're setting the preload. And the only time that you would really need to set the preload is if you had the engine apart. But now, if you have a hydraulic valve lifter engine and it's starting to get very noisy, for some reason that preload may have changed, and usually that's an indication of something going wrong and a lot of an excessive wear, either in the rocker shaft, a oiling problem up to the engine. But the idea of the preload is to basically take that piston that is inside that hydraulic lift. There's a little piston in there, almost like a piston on a bucket loader, all right? And you want to center it in the bore. And like I said, it's all different if you have like a Chevy engine, Chevy type of with a rocker stud. And what you're going to do is you're going to turn the nut, and you're going to be moving the rocker arm up and down, and it's going to be working on the push rod into the hydraulic lifter. You could have a Ford style where you have to shim it or what have you, or some others have shims. But the whole idea is that when you're setting preload on a hydraulic lifter, you want, however the adjustment is made, you want to have it loose, and then you want to basically take the push rod and you want to twist it between your fingers. And then you want to keep twisting it back and forth between your fingers like chopsticks. Just move it back and forth. You don't have to go 360 degrees. And when the preload is set properly, so you've taken up all of the free play, you will no longer be able to twist the push rod between your fingers. You will not be able to roll it between your fingers. And then most engines with a hydraulic valve lift, they'll say zero lash, which is the preload. It's not a lash with a feeler gauge. It'll say zero lash and then one turn on the nut on the rocker arm. So basically you would go and you would take the rocker arm, you'd be tightening the nut on, you would take the push rod, excuse me, in your hand, you'd be tightening, rolling the push rod between your fingers, you get to where you can't roll it anymore, and then do one turn on the nut, or some guys like to do three quarters of a turn or what have you, and then that would be setting your preload. And the whole purpose of that is to center the piston in the valve lifter, so when it fills with oil and empties from oil, it's using full travel, full deflection of that lifter. Now, that is very simple. Most engines today that have solid lifters that have an adjustment, a lash setting, whether it's an agricultural engine or an engine on a weed whacker, due to the advanced metallurgy, the advanced manufacturing processes, is that the valve adjustment stays much longer than it did 30-40 years ago. On a car engine, you probably need to adjust it every 5,000 to 10,000 miles, maybe on an industrial engine every couple of hundred hours. But it is something that you need to be mindful of, all right? And you also need to be mindful of that it should be checked, because like gray hair sneaking up on you, all right, it's going to start to to lose that valve lash adjustment over time. The ideal is to be able to take the motor, take the valve cover off. If the spec is 20,000ths and you've taken care of that motor and it's had good oil in it and clean oil and an oil that is a good product, is that you check and say, man, these things are right at 20,000 and a half, no need to even touch them because I'll mess them up. That is the best case scenario. But don't be alarmed if they need a little bit of tweaking. The only thing that you would be alarmed with is if they are too tight or excessively loose. You go to one cylinder and it's 22,000 instead of 20 and the other one is 30,000. Then we have to stop and look, because that's a potential problem. And historically, there's a very good chance when something breaks or fails in the valve train that you're taking the engine out because you're dropping a valve into the motor, and you don't want that. That's $30,000 on a big diesel. How many bushels of corn or soybeans or whatever you're growing, wheat, that is, you don't want that with a simple valve lash adjustment and valve lash check. So you know, keep that in mind. Now also, before I close here, is that, you know, the reason why I discussed in the building about volumetric efficiency and cylinder fill, right, is that that's important with any engine, because you want it to run the most efficiently. You want to have the, you don't want something to be to run hot because you have a valve too tight or what have you, flame cutting something. But on small engines, this is the same thing holds true. And if you have a rope start style, a pull start style small engine, whether it's on a lawnmower or whether it's on a C10 that doesn't have electric start on a small engine is very forgiving because it spins the crankshaft, and which in turn increases the piston velocity much faster than you would with a pull start with a rope. So the thing is that a lot of small engines are excessively hard to start, all right, because the valve lash is off, and hardly no one runs the valve lash on small engines, all right. Most small engines do not have a hydraulic camshaft because of two things. Number one, with a hydraulic camshaft, you need to be able to have a pressurized oiling system. You can't have a splash oiling system and fill a hydraulic lifter with that to act like a shock absorber. All right, so you need to have a pressurized oiling system, and also a hydraulic valve train adds a lot of expense and complexity to an engine versus a solid lifter. So most small engines have a solid lifter camshaft, and even if they have a pressurized oiling system. So for instance, my lawn tractor has a pressurized oiling system, but the Briggs & Stratton engine has a solid lifter camshaft because they don't want that expense. Of those lifters are much more expensive, they're much more complex, you have to run oil to them, you have to drain the oil back, versus a splash where you could just spray some oil on that. You're not using the oil. On a hydraulic lifter, the oil is used as a lubricant for the lifter as it goes in the bore, its interaction with the push rod, and its interaction with the lobe. And it's a working fluid with a hydraulic lifter. It's actually working to take up the lash. A solid lifter just needs to be lubricated. It has the oil, does not wear two hats, that's a working fluid. So keep in mind that if you have a small engine that's getting hard to start, that doesn't run the way it should, doesn't seem to have the power, everything we said about volumetric efficiency, lift, blow down, still holds true. All right, people start to blame the carburetor, they blame everything else, right, is that there's a very good possibility that the valve lash has increased to such an extent that you're not getting enough valve movement and creating what's called depression inside the carburetor for it start to pull fuel. So, you know, these are good winter projects. Go around and check the lash. You have a seed tender, you have a lawn tractor, you have something, you have a weed whacker, is that you set the lash on those, and you will be surprised how long they will run efficiently and not give you problems. And the worst thing to do is have a small engine. You know, and I've said this many times before, you know, you could be planting beans and the small engine on a seed tender brings you to your knees because it doesn't want to start or run properly. All right, so keep that in mind. On an engine with a electric start, whatever, even like a lawn tractor electric start, is that it'll mask to a greater extent the the increase in the valve lash and the minimal valve movement because it is because the cranking speed is faster. But at one particular point, it will make it harder to start also. So keep that in mind. It's not something, but the rope start, the pull start, small engines are very, very prone to this. And if you were to read the owner's manual, it says to set the valve lash, but no one ever does it, right? So, you know, like I said, that's good winter project, cold, snowy day. You start to run the valve lash and everything. And, you know, because on an engine, you probably need to buy a valve cover. When you're inside there, you'll clean everything up, wash the valve cover, look at everything, inspect the valve springs, inspect everything. And like I say, is that if you follow the manufacturer's specifications, so on your combine, on your track, they say you will every 3,000 hours run the valves, every 2,000 hours. If you follow that within reason, you're 100% fine. But please keep in mind that it is imperative for you to do that for efficiency and longevity of that motor. As I said before, any questions, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. And now for our special delivery, and I am proud to say that Firestone Ag has partnered with me on this special delivery to bring you this information. And that company was founded by Harvey Firestone. He was a farmer like us. He was a fourth generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. And Mr. Firestone, you know, he dreamed of putting, he knew one of the obstacles in production agriculture was the steel wheel, because the farmer, not only did it beat up the roads, but it beat the farmer up and also was hard on the soil. So he dreamed of putting rubber tires in farm tractors. And that mindset, that thinking out of the box, that innovative mindset is still the core of Firestone Ag today and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar, their new Evo tire, their AD2 technology, and their new replacement tracks. They actually have a deal going on with tracks right now. I think they have a pretty good rebate. So the Firestone of tracks. So if you have a track machine and you need tracks, check out those new Firestone tracks. That's right on their website. The soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. Alrighty, so Troy from Oklahoma writes, you had a show a few weeks ago on pulse width circuits. I really enjoyed that. You mentioned noise in an electrical circuit. Can you please explain that more? Thank you. Basically, what noise is interference in that electrical circuit and not a smoothness of the signal. I don't even want to say smoothness, it's a roughness. And then what will happen is that the only way that you could truly see noise is with an oscilloscope. So the thing is that if you were to, the best way for me to say what noise is on electrical circuit is static. So remember, like if you have the old AM radio in a car and you're tuning it in, and you get it like that, there's static. You could still hear the person talking in the music, but there's this static that's coming through. Well, that is what, in simplistic terms, that is what noise means in an electrical circuit. And if you have noise in an electrical circuit and it's a microprocessor, so let's say that you have a sensor. You have a sensor on your combine, and it's reading whatever, it's reading separator speed, and you're getting noise on that line because it's getting what's called EMI, electromotive interference. The ECU, the control unit's not going to be able to interpret that noise, and it may think that it's going to skew that reading. In the context of what I was talking about in the pulse width modulated circuit podcast, is that most manufacturers shut the ground circuit on and off because they said it's quieter electrically. And that's what Troy is talking about. What I meant by it's quieter electrically, just like if you were to hook up jumper cables to a car, all right, to jumpstart something, that you should always do the positive on first and the negative on last. When you're disconnected, you take the negative on first and the positive off last. So what you want to do is, if you were to put the negative on first and you went to go connect the positive, all right, the thing is that the guy had the door open, so the dome light was on, you're going to get an arc because it's the electricity is going to look to follow that path. The ground side, it doesn't look to follow it as aggressively, so you're going to get an arc there. And that spark, that arc, is what's called electrical noise. And that is why it is always, they historically shut the ground side off. They duty cycle the ground on and off because it doesn't make that electrical arc, that static, that arcing into the circuit. So hopefully that answers your question. And if it's really hard for you to explain that over a podcast, but if you just think of the jumper cables, that's what it's talking about. Or if you have the radio turned on or vacuum turned on in the house and you unplug it and you go to plug it back in, you'll see that arc. That's electrical noise. So listen, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you got value from this and I did not confuse you. Hopefully for 2020 there will be the Hot Rod Farmer YouTube channel, and I will be able to show you a lot of these things and supplement the podcasts with a show to give you a visual component of it. But always know that I'm here for you, and the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and as I always say, my beloved and precious America. You have a blessed day, and thanks for listening.